Welcome to Cultivating Curiosity, where we get down and dirty with the experts on all the ways science and agriculture touch our lives, from what we eat to how we live. I'm Emily Davenport.
And I'm Jordan Powers. And we're from the University of Georgia's College of Agricultural and Environmental Sciences. We are here on the UGA Griffin campus with Dario Chavez, Associate Professor of Horticulture on the Griffin campus, who is also in the Institute of Plant Breeding, Genetics, and Genomics. Dario, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Can you share your academic journey with us and what got you interested in horticulture specifically?
Sure. Getting interested in agriculture in general began with my parents. I was raised and basically lived in a farm since I was probably 18 years old. And my dad and my grandpa farmed for a long, long time there in the Andes in Ecuador. They had potatoes, corn, carrots, and other things. And they had a dairy and beef cattle as well. I was not really into it as any kid. You know, you don't get interested in the things that your parents do.
Mm-hmm.
When I started trying to select what I was going to do for undergrad, I realized that I really, really liked to be outside. And one thing that really always bothered me, at least with the potatoes, when my dad grew them, is that I always thought, you know, I always hear the cultivar names, and the cultivar names are the same when I was little to when I was older. And it's like, I always wonder why there were not that many new cultivars there, at least in Ecuador at the time. And I started looking into what basically, how you, can you make new cultivars or what is that? And then in Ecuador and South America, there is a very important institution, Zamorano University in Honduras, that basically is probably one of the highest ranks in agriculture in South America and Latin America. And I started looking into it, and my older brother encouraged me to apply for it. I got in and started studying agronomy. After that, I still wanted to continue learning how you create new cultivars, work with new cultivars. My plan was, well, I always like to eat what I grow. What I mean by that is being outside, and if I have the chance to grab a fruit or something, that was kind of my ideal crop. So I started applying for programs, and I was able to get into a master's in the blueberry breeding and genetics program at University of Florida. And then I stayed there too for my PhD, working peaches, plums, and citrus. Once I was about to be done, a position came open here at UGA, and I applied. And basically, I have been here since 2014.
Well, advance congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. It's on 10 years with UGA. That's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very exciting. So many crops, including peaches, are affected by temperature, which is particularly important to consider in the face of a changing climate. And we've heard a lot about scientists and growers mentioning chill hours.
Yeah.
Can you break down what that means for our audience?
Yeah. So something interesting about at least this time of the year, this is the time of the year if you probably contact TimeNox at the weather network, and if they were looking at clicks, a number of clicks looking at the weather stations, you would see that there's a lot of access of the data for the weather stations. And this is related to chill hours. Chill hours basically is just a measure of how many hours of temperature we get between 32 and 45 degrees. And what happens with respect to the plant is that our plants in early fall, the leaves start dropping and the plants go into a dormant stage. And what they need to come out of that is chill hours. So they need coal. So somebody came with a way to quantify that, meaning that if you have a cultivar that needs this many chill hours, and if it doesn't get that, it can affect bloom, growth, and other things. Growers around this time of the year, they're always checking the weather stations to see how many chill hours we have received. It's a very good observation that allows us to see how it will be the crop quality-wise for bloom and fruit set. Because once plants start blooming and they don't have enough chill, you can come up with other issues.
And we can link to, you mentioned the UGA Weather Network, which is run by Pam Knox. So we will absolutely link to that in the show notes because it's such an extensive network and a resource that we have for growers and just a curious general public.
As a grower, I can see the impact that can be just having that information that you can pull your cell phone and look into it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that somebody's actually making sure that the system is working all the time.
Well, and we know the importance of the chill hours, but we also know that a late frost combined with less winter chill hours sounds like it can be a big blow to the peach industry's production. What does this mean for the future of peaches in Georgia?
It's funny because we were just talking about this. And so I am in charge of the peach session for this Southeastern Fruit and Vegetable Conference in Savannah. And talking to the growers last year, this year I decided to focus on these conversations because we thought that it was important to think about this. If I am a grower or researcher, I keep thinking, well, are the late freezes happening basically later and later in the season, or are they happening early or at the same time? And the funny thing is that when you plot historical data of the last freeze, it's pretty much a flat line. There are some variations, yes, like sometimes they will come really early, mm-hmm. and some other times will come April. So there is a fluctuation in time. But when you plot a trend line, it comes to a flat line, meaning that it's not that the date becomes later or later. Problem is actually that, you know, we talk about chill hours, and chill hours are affected by warm weather. So, you know, if our peaches, let's say, they have accumulated a chill that they need, and we get a wave of heat, and the plants say, well, I have what I need for bloom, so I'm just going to go ahead and start blooming. So if we have a December that is pretty warm, what it tends to do is that peaches in general, and even blueberries and other crops, they say, okay, let's go. So last year, for example, we were 2 weeks ahead on bloom. What normally happens.
Okay.
So if we had had that freeze date, it was not different to other freeze dates that we have other years. What it was different is just the conditions that we had in December that made that basically the plants just start moving. It basically put us in a very susceptible or tender stage of development where the freeze just took us out because we were so ahead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's kind of a combo. This year, for example, if you look at the winter that we have, it's very uniform. We haven't really gotten a hot day between the winter.
Sure. Yeah.
To get to the 60s is like a day like today where we have 60s but it's rain. And so it's not like the sun is beating on the plants.
Telling them, wake up.
Correct. Although they are ready to wake up. Mm-hmm. What it means that if we get a week of warm weather, more likely they will start moving. But it has been a really nice winter for accumulation of chill. And the plants basically are just sitting there waiting. I prefer this because there's no surprises. There's something that the growers can work with. If we get warm weather and then all of a sudden a freeze comes out of nowhere, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. But of course, you know, we have that option too this year. We hope that because the plants are uniform in their chill accumulation, hopefully they just take better these fluctuations in weather until truly we're there to bloom.
We know our peaches took a big hit last year, and we covered that quite extensively through CAS. Mm-hmm. So we'll link to some of those stories in the show notes as well. And I can't even fathom what that looks like for some of these growers. I mean, I lost production on my 3 household blueberry plants, but I can't imagine your livelihood requiring this and to have it be just hit that hard.
And every year is different. What was the worry last year? It may be not the case this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always say that I have so much respect because they basically roll with the punches. And sometimes it's a perfect season that where there's no problem. There is crop everywhere. So we're hoping for one of those because having a 95% loss on their crop is a lot. And if you have to pay the bills and keep up with your responsibilities, you know, it's always important to just have something that they are producing. Besides, the share market of peaches for Georgia is always important to have some of those peaches in the market just to make sure that we're here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's not for the faint-hearted.
Not at all.
So along those lines, can you tell us more about how you're working with growers to develop peach varieties that might be more successful in the face of a changing climate?
When we think about peach cultivars and also production management techniques, what we're trying to do is get something that will help us not get affected by weather as much as we normally do. As a breeder, we're looking at evaluating material that we have been producing for decades. What I mean by that is that some of the materials before they are released to the market, they have been evaluated for 16, 17 years. And the idea is that you want to see consistently a crop. And even if you know that there was a freeze this year, let's say, and 95% of the commercial production is gone, you want to see cultivars that still have fruit on them because, you know, having fruit and not having fruit makes a difference. The idea is that something that even when you have those kind of conditions that can break a crop in general, you still have a cultivar that basically will still produce some. The same thing talking about chill. By whatever happens weather-wise, we don't get the accumulation of chill that we need for a plant to bloom. We want a cultivar that can take those swings too.
Mm-hmm.
So adaptation is probably the big term that it will have a lot of different connotations basically for us. You know, chill accumulation can bloom without that many chills hours. And if a freeze comes, do we have enough flowers still left that will produce a crop? Because people don't realize, but you know, a peach tree can have 5,000, 6,000 flowers, right?
Wow.
And you don't need all of them.
No.
Yeah. You need 300.
Can you imagine if
you had? You need 300 good fruit in there. So you are talking about maybe 10, 20% of the crop.
Okay.
Of course, the freeze is not going to pick and choose random, like very uniformly in the tree.
Yeah.
But having that opportunity of evaluating materials throughout the years is actually something we want to do and hopefully produce something that the growers will have and will help them. And from the production side of things, we want to also see if we're going to have years that we have lack of chill, can we do something with the trees that are in the ground that we know that they're going to be affected by those conditions? Can we do something management-wise, like spray a chemical that will allow them to break dormancy? Some techniques that will help them basically still bloom and fruit set normally. And in the case of the freezes, the same thing. Can we come up with a technique that can help? Everybody that knows about blueberries has seen probably the overhead irrigation, freeze protection, where you see all the icicles and blueberries. Mm. Well, you could do that in peaches, but in Georgia, it's really not feasible just because the amount of acreage and also the soil type that we have. But you can use wind machines. So some growers use wind machines to be able to bring that heat from the upper layers of the air down and mix it up and warm up to where the plants are. But we are looking into new techniques to hopefully have something that the growers can use. And we're trying to hit the problems with different solutions just to have some different tools that hopefully will help in the future.
From the breeding side to the production side to the management side.
Yeah.
There is so much that's going into that peach that we're bringing home.
There is production from the southeast or the east coast is completely different to the west coast as well.
Hmm.
What a peach producer does in the west coast is completely different than the east. But we have so many pest diseases and also environmental factors that affect peach production in the east coast and the south as well. That's why I have so much respect for the growers, because they just, it's truly an art to grow a peach tree and other fruit trees as well, you know, in these conditions.
Well, and that was the perfect lead in to my next question here, in talking about how the work you're doing is even more important now that the Louisiana and the Texas breeding programs have shut down. What does the future look like for the breeding program in Georgia?
This breeding program in South Georgia has been here in Georgia since the 90s. And before that, it started in the 80s in a different location, but we have been in Adipogos Research Station since the 90s.
The Adipogos Research and Education Center is one of 8 off-campus research centers in the UGA College of Agricultural and Environmental Sciences. Established in 1939 on 300 acres near the city of Adipogos, Georgia, the center is located in the extreme lower part of southwest Georgia, just 5 miles from the Florida line. Current research efforts focus on agronomic row crops and some orchard crops, including corn, cotton, peanuts, small grains, soybeans, and of course, peaches.
The interesting thing is that it's probably the only now program in the United States with that chill range. Why it's important for us is because we still collaborate a lot with University of Florida, and also we collaborate with Middle Georgia, the breeding program in there. And you know, as a breeder, we need to have access to different gene pools. We are talking about chill requirements and chill hours. Well, the way that chill hours are coming along, if you look up, plot the chill hours accumulation for location, the trend line is actually going down. We're functionally losing chill. You look at it from the 70s to now. What it means is that the chill groups or chill cultivars that we used to grow are not the same. We have lost functional chill groups. And what I mean by groups is, like, let's say, you know, in Middle Georgia, you grow between 650 to 850 chill hours. And what it means is that basically you have cultivar X is 650 chill hours requirement, cultivar Y is 750, and cultivar C is 850. And you can grow those without problems in Middle Georgia. Now, before, you used to be able to grow 950, 1,050 chill hours. And that is not the case anymore. You could grow them, the plant will grow, but you will not be able to set a crop, which, you know, functionally speaking, tells you that that's not doable. So for a breeding perspective, having the access to those gene pools helps us, because when you cross, let's say, a high chill cultivar with a mild chill or a low chill cultivar, what happens is that the hybrids actually come in the middle. Huh. So for us, having locations in different chill areas are important because that allows us to have the hybrids in there and be able to collect pollen of things that we need and then bring the pollen back to different locations. So we have basically a kind of a middle ground. So having that collaboration group allows us to basically look at materials from 150 chill hours to up to 800, 900 chill hours.
Wow.
So we can move germplasm from down there to basically up here. It does require time of selection, but just being able to access those conditions, you know, or germplasm in adipogos has been seeing, at least in the Gulf area, seeing lack of chill issues for decades now, which, you know, in middle Georgia, we're starting to see more often.
Mm.
But this is something that we have been dealing for years now and decades in South Georgia, which means that the cultivars that we have been, or the selections that we have been producing, has been evaluated for decades for those conditions. And we have germplasm that does well. So we want to bring those genes to basically middle Georgia as well. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that that breeding program is not just going to help the Gulf area, but the idea is that it will be a gene pool also for the middle Georgia area, the main production area, and also a gene pool for Florida as well, because, you know, the collaboration is what helps us to basically being able to have probably one of the only collaborations where you can have all these chill ranges and look at all this material together.
Quite a collaboration, mm-hmm. all with a common goal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Helping our growers preserve those peaches.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
What excites you most about the work that you're doing?
Another thing that I'm very interested on is from the breeding perspective is about training systems and how we grow trees. Breeders have focused 100% on the fruit, and I don't blame them because that's what the consumer wants and also the grower wants, how much fruit is produced, how it tastes and things like that. But we forgot about the tree. What I mean by that is that everything is about efficiency, and I talk about the labor situation. Well, we prune the trees by hand. And what I think about this is like, well, if I am a person growing a tree, I am not growing trees. I'm actually growing fruit. What I mean by that is I want the tree that's the most efficient as possible in growing and not putting a lot of growth that I will have to come and prune later on. So I have a PhD student in the institute that has been looking at three-dimensional studies of architecture for peaches, trying to characterize branching differences, density, and trying to see if there is a genetics component to it. And we do believe that there is a genetics component.
We wrote a story on Jordan Knapp Wilson, doctoral student in the Institute of Plant Breeding, Genetics, and Genomics, and how he's using 3D scanning technology to inform peaches of the future. We'll include that link in the show notes for you.
He is about to finish next year, and we are interested because he has opened the door for us to be able to study the three-dimensional aspects of architecture, and we can tie that to production too. So, for example, we have a trial that has different rootstocks and scions in there, and we look at the differences of branching. Well, we have MP29, the rootstock that is dwarfing, and we saw that the number of branches that that tree is producing is completely relatively smaller than the standard tree, which means that it will save money also for pruning. If we're trying to create a niche and focus on a niche that nobody's really working on, probably would be tree architecture, training systems in production, and just basically trying to make a change in the sense of grow what we have available already for the growers. Can you grow it in a different way? Can you make it more efficient? The idea is that just efficiency overall.
All of these tools for growers to have.
Correct.
Because it is such a variable industry to be in. Mm-hmm. So if you can create some consistency with at least those tools that they have.
Correct.
Available, mm-hmm. That's really important. So switching topics slightly, we know that your wife, Rachel Idol, is another CAAS researcher working with blueberries,
yep.
Which is another important Georgia crop being impacted by climate change. What are dinnertime conversations like at your house?
Well, we talk a lot of shop sometimes. But we have kids now, like little kids, that they have taken over all those conversations, which is probably good.
Yeah, right.
But we do bounce ideas back and forth. We are collaborators in several projects too. We were trained the same way. We met in grad school, so we tend to think very similarly, which, you know, it's always nice to have a sounding board at home that will be 100% honest with you and just tell you basically if there is a better way to improve things. The blueberry industry and the peach industry are quite different in the sense of the peach industry is a mature industry, and the blueberry industry, although has been here for a while now, is still is a changing industry. Another thing that is different is that a lot of people don't know this, but four companies hold about 90% of the acreage of peaches in Georgia.
Wow.
Which means that I can sit down in one room with all the four companies and just basically that will be it. But in blueberries, you know, you have hundreds and hundreds of growers from little to middle sized to big. So it's a different dynamic. It's nice to talk about the different things that basically we do and with the industries and how we approach them.
That's always fascinating to me to think about. What does that look like?
Right? Yeah.
and now you're raising the next generation.
That's right.
Yeah. Hopefully, you know, we never know. Like I say, when I was a kid, I really was not into it, agriculture, and I was all stuff that although I help in the farm, it really didn't seem like my calling until I was older. So
until it clicked. You never know.
Exactly.
All right, so the hardest hitting question we're going to ask, what's your favorite way to eat a peach?
I actually love to, during evaluation, when ripening season, you cannot beat a ripened fruit from the tree. It's just a completely different experience.
I bet.
Once you have that, it's difficult to go back to the supermarket to get your fruit.
I bet.
It's just different. And you know, my kids, they love it. When you're talking about consumer preference, they always worry about peaches because consumption is going down and people wonder what's happening. And when you look at the demographics, a lot of the demographics that eat peaches are older people. So they are wondering why younger kids are not. And I think it's just because of a smaller fruit is easier to have in a package. But if you have a true ripened fruit and a good tasty peach, my kids take it anytime over anything else.
Okay. Good.
So, you know, I think it's just education. I know that the industry here in Georgia and also in the southeastern U.S. came up with a product a few years ago that it was in little bags and a smaller fruit size. And it seems that that market is going well. It seems that people prefer something that you can grab. And it's basically like a Ziploc bag that has several peaches in there. And to me, it's like actually a good idea. I believe one of the brands are called Little Fussies. And then there's another one. But you know, last year, I believe they were trying to focus on that market because they had a lot of orders from that still.
Okay.
And it makes sense. I mean, as a parent of a little kid, you know, I give my three-year-old a peach and she wears 98%. So I get it, but I do. I mean, I still remember growing up, my mom used to make peach dumplings, wrapping a whole peach in this dough and boiling it. Oh my gosh, a little bit of butter and brown sugar, and it was ruining that tree-ripened experience, but we didn't have a whole lot of tree-ripened peaches where I grew up. I was waiting for you to say you actually don't like peaches at all.
So no, me too.
Well, you know, it's funny because sometimes people develop allergies to them, which is sad, but you know, in my case, you cannot change a ripened fruit from the field compared with anything else.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
We have covered a lot of ground, from the ground the peaches they're growing in to picking them off the tree. What have we missed?
I'm very excited to be here. I have been here for 10 years and I always like to look back and say, you know, how I saw my job at the beginning. And I always try to look into the short, medium and long-term goals for my program. And those, of course, change with time. I think this is an exciting time because there is more opportunities out there. I'm very excited to see where the future takes. And it may mean that it will be a different production to what we do now. And it may mean that we are going to change the production systems a lot. But I'm really looking forward to what's going to happen with the industry.
Well, Dario, thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's a busy, busy life that you lead and we're gearing up toward the start of peach season. So we appreciate you taking the time to come in and talk to us today.
Thank you. And it was a pleasure to talk to you. And let me know if I can help with anything.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Cultivating Curiosity, a podcast produced by the UGA College of Agricultural and Environmental Sciences. A special thanks to Mason McClintock for our music and sound effects. Find more episodes wherever you get your podcasts.